Sounds good.
I'll ask you some questions. So we're in the purpose-driven RV right now, the main stake for our podcast. And this week we're parked outside of our own home. We're parked outside of Saddleback. We're hosting the Purpose-Driven Essentials Conference, which is really what I was listening to Rick say. This was his life purpose. This was what he was put on the planet to do. He's just spilling his guts to pastors from all over California, all over the country, really, and a bunch of international folks. So I roped my good friend Arthur Benjamin into the bishop himself. I roped him into the RV, and we had such a great conversation earlier today over the live patio experience. Yeah. About pastoring a church yourself and really starting to get some nuggets, or getting just connected to a pastor who's willing to share and spill his guts so openly like Rick does. And there's not a lot of people, I don't think, who realize how open Pastor Rick Warren is with his failures and his successes. Yeah. And even the stuff that he's found some sense or sort of success in, he really wants you to take it. And if it works, own it. And
yeah,
more importantly, if you're a capable teacher, to teach it. Even if it's got your name on it, with your own examples on it, he just wants great leaders to lead great movements.
And I think that's so amazing, man. I think that's one of the things I love about coming here and being able to just sit and receive from him. I think he allows what God has given him to be owned by the body and to be owned by the entire pastoralship of ministry.
Yeah.
And it makes it just refreshing.
It's kind of crazy to think that he's so open. I mean, open source material is something that's common between our generation, right?
We're
looking for something. We have like the internet is right at our fingertips, right? We can Google something, or we can dig in. Even like classic Bible software is all at our fingertips now. I can go look at something in Greek or Hebrew within a few seconds. I can have what I need, right?
Yeah.
And so this idea of like open sourcing the content, the ministry tactics and principles is, I think it's so refreshing.
Yeah.
I think it's super refreshing. And you and I have a common, we have a common starting point. We both served in ministry together, and now uniquely you're leading a church, right? So tell us the name of your church for the people that are listening to our podcast. What's your current assignment? Where does the Lord have you right now?
Right now, I'm serving as lead pastor of Love of Christ Fellowship Church in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
Which is a predominantly all Filipino congregation that is just, man, just excited, exploding, growing,
yeah.
And just full of just what God has next for us.
And in a podcast, since people can't really see us, what makes a predominantly Filipino church a really unique place for you is that they can't see you, but you're not Filipino, bro. You're not a Filipino dude. You're black, bro. I'm Mexican. You're black, but you're pastoring at a Filipino church, which is crazy. Tell me, how did he bring you to that spot?
You know, it's really interesting. I was serving at the Rock Church and was teaching in Impact 195 and was discipling a young man that I met in Impact 195. And he was a leader at the church at the time.
Okay.
And when their pastor resigned or retired, they brought me in as a guest speaker while they were looking for another Filipino pastor. And according, just basically God maneuvering things around, I ended up staying.
That's awesome.
So it's awesome.
Once you go black, you don't go back. Yeah. What's up, dude? Is that appropriate? Oh my gosh, I didn't
dude,
say that
awesome.
This podcast was appropriate. I just said we were gonna have conversations. So
that's awesome, dude.
So the question I've got for you is, you're obviously responding to the call to pastor, and that's not an easy call. It's something that it requires everything of you, right? It's your time. It's the best of who you are. You're determined to lead well. You're not just speaking on Sundays, but you're leading an organization. You're shepherding next generation leaders. You're raising pastors. And after I spend any time listening to Rick spill his guts, I think, man, I want to be a better leader. Right?
Yeah.
What are some of the challenges you've experienced as you've now made the transition from being a leader who's been led. Now you're a leader who is leading others. You've been in the passenger seat for a little while, supporting a ministry. Now you're in the driver's seat. What are some critical changes there, especially if you think of a listening audience who at maybe some point in their near future, they see themselves becoming a lead pastor? What are some of those bigger challenges that you've maybe didn't anticipate, or what are some ones that you thought, man, this is going to be a challenge, and it is challenging? What are some of the insights as you've stepped into leading a church?
You know, I think as a lead pastor now, one of the things that I really value is the importance of being surrounded by healthy leaders. Mm. I think when you are serving under a leader, you take for granted the community you have that serve alongside you. And when you step into the lead role, you really understand how vitally important it is to surround yourself not just with leaders, but with healthy leaders, with individuals that love what they do, with individuals that are committed to what they do and committed to making what they do about the body and about Jesus. And I think, you know, stepping into the leadership role, I used to hear sayings from the previous generation that, oh, leadership is lonely, or is lonely at the top. And, you know, I think it's lonely at the top only when you want it to be lonely at the top.
That's good. That's really good.
And so I think that for me, being intentional about having people in my life like you and other individuals who are just healthy, who love God, who love the body, and who love what they do, makes this journey amazing. Yeah. And then I think being intentional about valuing my family and valuing the surrounding of friends and laughter. You know, ministry is work, but ministry is also a joy, and it's a journey. And
that's
so
really
for me,
good.
That's great.
That's really good. I'm thinking about the concept that I've heard so often as I've spent time talking to other pastors about the value of collaboration. And it was something that we had talked about up on the patio earlier today. How is collaboration helping you be a better pastor?
You know, I think that the beautiful thing about collaboration is that we learn from each other, and I get an opportunity to recognize my strengths, but also to recognize my weaknesses, and to partner with individuals that are stronger or who are gifted or equipped in areas that I may not be the most gifted or equipped in. And it doesn't make me insecure. It doesn't give me a low self-esteem as a pastor. It is recognizing that this is what I do well, and these are things I don't do well.
It's the definition of a body, right?
Exactly. Like, yeah, and being the body.
Why would you excel at all things? There's no need for a body if that's the
case. And yet sometimes the church can give this idea that as a pastor, you should be the administrator, the worship leader. You know, I love the fact that I'm not, for all intents and purposes, the best preacher in my congregation. I have guys who are on our teaching team who are better preachers than I am.
That's good.
And I love that. And I empower them. I encourage them. And when they preach, I'm like, dude, your gift is incredible, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I affirm their gifting. And it sounds weird that the lead pastor is not the most dynamic in the audience. But I'm confident in the role that I've been called to.
So good. I'm wondering if there's more people who need to hear that fact, that if you're the lead pastor, it doesn't mean that you have to be the best speaker. It means if you're the lead pastor, you need to be the best pastor.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And take ownership of your position and empower those who come alongside to be uniquely who they are. And I've told our teaching pastors, our teachers, our leadership, I don't want you to be a copy of me. I want you to be who God has called you to be genuinely and uniquely, because you're part of the body and we need your uniqueness.
That's powerful. That's really powerful. What are some of the challenges that you've experienced in collaboration? I mean, I can only think, you know, I think back to when I was in school, and, you know, if you're put on a collaboration team, there's always going to be people who are going to be riding the wave, not pulling their weight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you manage that as a leader who's trying to promote collaboration? Do you have to fight those kind of issues where there's maybe somebody riding coattails, or do you feel like that's not necessarily happening inside the ministry that you're experiencing right now?
Oh, there's always that type of situation. Anytime there is a collaboration, sometimes people only want a voice, but they don't want to put their hands to the plow.
They don't want to roll up their sleeves.
Yeah, right? And so, you know, it's challenging people not just to be a mouthpiece.
That's good.
You know, is allowing their hands and their feet to be a part of the work. So that we all celebrate when we accomplish the milestones that God's called us to. And you begin to be a part of the journey. You begin to be a part of it, not just in word, but in deed also. And so, yeah, we get individuals who have a loud voice, but, you know, when it comes to actually putting their hands in and
doing
getting dirty,
work, right?
Yeah, they're like, oh, I'm busy or oh. And
yeah.
And you have to recognize those type of attitudes and those type of mindsets, and you challenge it. Or you remove it.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, I'll challenge you again. But if there's no change, then we have to remove you from the equation because you're not a benefit. And if you're a part of the body, you know, one of the things I love, and this may not be the most appropriate way,
yeah.
is anytime you have, you know, we use this medical term of impotency,
mm-hmm.
that when the body's healthy, it operates the way it's supposed
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
And when it doesn't operate, when certain members and organs don't operate the way they're mm-hmm. supposed to, the mm-hmm. way they're designed to, we call it impotency.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the body of Christ, there can be impotency, meaning that we can have individuals that are supposed to operate a certain way, but for whatever intents and purposes, they don't.
They're not.
And so, and there's a medical terminology for that, saying that, hey, you're impotent. You're not functioning the way you're called. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes in the church, because we want to be nice, we don't want to diagnose or call things what it's supposed
what
to
are.
Be. I think that's a disservice we do to each other.
Yeah.
We should call each other out and say, hey, you're operating in impotency.
Huh. That's really good. I've heard it said by a mutual leader that we both respect, George Clarier. He says,
yeah.
When you talk about culture, and this is, I don't know why I went straight to culture, but culture isn't necessarily what you're putting to practice as the leader. A lot of times it's what you tolerate.
Yeah.
So when you're talking
That's
about calling
good.
People out, a lot of times leaders need to be better about being honest with who's inside their pack, who's doing stuff in their team. If there's more that can be drawn
wow.
up to the surface, he said a lot of times we allow culture to exist because we permit something, we tolerate it
oh,
instead
that's good.
Of just thinking that it's what we do that makes culture. He said maybe more impactful as leaders, what we tolerate inside of our ministries creates an even louder culture. And I thought, man,
that's ridiculous.
I know it got me between the eyes because I thought, man, I tolerate a lot of stuff in the name of loving people.
Yeah.
I'll tolerate a lot. But as leaders, your job isn't to love everyone the same. Your job is to bring the best out of people.
Yeah.
And that, not to say that you don't love people, but there's a function inside of leadership that allows you to love people well, but your job is to make disciples that make disciples. And so you've got to call the best of people in, right? And
yeah.
if I'm trying to be your worship leader and I can't hit a bar for the life of me, you got to be honest with me.
Yeah.
As a leader, right? And that's an easy example, but I think of people who, you know, maybe desire to be teachers, and there's a season of learning that has to happen, or some practice on some other levels before they can just hit the pulpit, right, behind
exactly.
you as the leader.
And I think that actually what that speaks to is a lack of love, that when we lower the bar for individuals, that's a lack of love.
That's fire.
That when you really love someone,
yeah.
you really do, because you see the potential they have and you want that potential to be manifested, not only that they might experience God at that level, but mm-hmm. that God can be seen at that level,
yeah.
that's authentic love. And
that's
I think
good.
That we have this misunderstanding in the body that lowering the bar so that they don't have to really reach for anything
or be honest with themselves
or communicating where they're at and where they're not at
mm-hmm.
is somehow love. And I think that's a misconception that we have in the body.
Yeah, it's bad leadership.
Yeah,
it's bad leadership.
Exactly.
I mean, that's just call it what it is, right?
Yeah.
Tell me this, Arthur. You're here at a conference and you're learning, and that's a fortune that probably not a lot of people get in their schedule and like their time. But it's so important, in my opinion, for us to hear from a generation that's been at the plow for a while. And Rick is about to close down 40 years of
wow.
ministry in his local church. what are some of the big things that you were taking away just from being here at this event? People who are listening to this probably weren't attending or couldn't attend. So like today he was spilling his guts on some stuff. What are some big takeaways that just it resonated with you personally?
You know, let me reiterate a little bit just from the last time I was here and then today.
Yeah.
That when I came in June for the last conference, I was on the brink of thinking of quitting. Wow. I had been at my church about right at 4 years, and now I'm going on 4.5. And I was really kind of struggling through figuring out, because, you know, I came into an existing church. Yeah. And so
that
come with having a structure that you're trying to plow through and uproot things that aren't biblical or aren't healthy, and you're going through all these things. And I was really on the brink of resigning.
That. Yeah, I didn't know that.
I was really, and I brought a pastor friend of mine with me, and he had been encouraging me. And you know, man, you know, Rick just spoke from the pulpit that back in June, and he just said, some of you are here and you came here in the back of your mind that maybe you should turn in your resignation. He said, and he challenged you. He said, I challenge you to outlast the problem,
dang,
outlast the situation, outlast the person. And it just, I literally started crying as I sat there, because I knew it was God speaking to me. And so I came here to the previous conference coming pretty much almost exhausted from like, God, I know you're calling me, but I just can't figure this out. I can't break through. I can't break through this barrier going on. Yeah. And so I came today, you know, Mingo, just completely refreshed, revived, just like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah,
like let's get the tools necessary. I knew I could do it before, but I just felt like I couldn't break through. I'm seeing breakthrough. There's just humongous change in our leadership,
that's
a humongous
big
change in our church, in the attitude and the way we're responding to God and to each other.
Yeah.
And so there's just such a hunger being here. There's such a hope being here and an excitement. And so I brought a team with me this year.
I saw him. Yeah, I met him. Young guys.
And so just, and even the most amazing thing also is after that conference, I started meeting with my young adult, you know, and didn't realize at the moment that a lot of them were saying, you know, Pastor, we had been kind of thinking about, a few of them said, we were kind of thinking about going to another church. They wanted to go to a church that was really more pursuing their generation.
Wow.
And I started having conversations with them about our church. You know, what would you like to see?
Yeah,
you know, how can we better engage your generation? You know, what do you think would that you would be excited to bring your friends to? And as we started having honest conversations, I said, anything's free for all. You could talk about my sermon.
Right,
you could talk
about.
And man, it was amazing to hear. And I had some of my young adult who came up to me after about 2 months of meetings, who said, you know, Pastor, this is the kind of church I want to be a part of. It's a church that my pastor cares. Yeah, my pastor cares about what I think. He cares about my generation.
Yeah.
And it's not just geared towards. And then you have to balance,
of course,
the generations. But it just renewed. And to hear some of our young adult talk about, Pastor, we want to be able to connect to the older generation. We don't want to feel like we're just being dragged along with whatever they want to do.
Yeah,
we want to connect.
There is a desire for young, up-and-coming leaders and people. They want to be connected to wisdom.
Yeah.
They want to be connected to experience. I think the problem is that their expectation is that they're just going to get written off, right? So it's your job almost as a broker. You broker those relationships. You find wisdom in a person or a couple, and you link them.
Exactly. You become
leader.
A bridge.
Yeah, you have to. And most people, I don't think that they chalk senior pastoring up to that. They think, I'm just going to preach. I'm going to do my thing on the pulpit. I'm going to walk, and then things will just arrange themselves.
Yeah.
What, in your opinion, give me a percentage ratio. How much of your time is spent at the microphone, where most people would think, oh, if I could just become a senior pastor, I just plant my own church, then I can really live the dream. What percentage are you spending working through, you know, discontentedness? Are you studying? Are you building bridges in your community? How much time do you really spend at the pulpit, laying down fire, dropping dimes?
Oh my gosh!
In a sermon,
it's like 10%.
There you
go. It's
Let
nowhere.
The masses know that it is not like, what you think, right?
If all you want to do is just be a communicator, and you think that is what being the lead pastor is, unless you're somehow going to get a position where you only preach, there's no.
Yeah,
it's 10%, man. I've found that shepherding. My congregation is really about shepherding the family and shepherding the community. And when you get into mending relationships,
yeah,
and mending brokenness, and making it tie all the way back to God and his plan, his perfect plan according to scripture.
Yeah.
I think that is what the snapshot is of shepherding, because that's what Jesus did.
Come on, that's
and
good.
And I think that's sometimes as shepherds we can make the ministry about other things. And for me, at least for me personally, I feel as though my charge or my call or my passion or my purpose is really about mending relationships and bridging gaps.
That's great.
And I've had some amazing conversations with older generations who are hurting, younger generations who are hurting, older generations who need a bridge,
right,
younger generations who need a bridge, and everybody turns to pastor, and I just become this bridge builder either between the broken and Jesus, mm-hmm, or mm-hmm, between husband and wives, or yeah, between parents and children, or children and parents,
yeah,
or between the church and the community. But it's always a bridge.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think that for me, I've just owned that. I've just owned the fact that I'm a bridge.
And you've got a look. We share a look. Actually, all three of us in the RV, because we're not. It's just not me, you and me, Arthur. We got Robert in here also. But
yeah.
Robert's Cuban, and people can never tell how old Robert is. They don't know. So, like, old guys approach Robert. Young people approach Robert. Everybody's like, Robert, you're my man, right? You're the same way. You're like, I don't know if you're in your 30s, bro. You can be pushing. You can be pushing late 30s. You can be pushing. You can be 29, bro. You got a little gray in there. So I'm like, you're my man. You're gonna help me. You're gonna connect me. I'm the same way. People can't figure out if I'm in my early 20s. No, that's a lie, bro. People know I'm late.
Late 20s,
early 30s, maybe late 30s. They have no clue. But somehow that ambiguity helps you and I connect easier, right?
Yeah.
People don't write you off for being like, oh, you're the young guy, oh, you're the old guy. Somehow you just fit. I think that's Jesus's gift to you as a leader to just relate,
man,
and connect to anybody, right? So we'll close down with this. You're leading a church now, which is so awesome. You're doing what I think is smart. Rick said it in his breakout session, or in his first session here. He said, it's wise to learn from your experience. It's even wiser to learn from somebody else's experience. You're on that next level of wisdom. You're gleaning before you're in a place where you're bleeding out, right? You're stocking up, you're storing up. For young pastors in the thick of ministry, probably somewhere in between senior pastor, but a little bit more savvy than like, this is my first month on the job. What advice do you give to a guy who's in a stride, but maybe is wondering, man, what's next out there, right? That was a season that you wrestled with, right?
Yeah.
And I want to know from a guy who is almost 5 years now into your next thing. There's a bunch of pastors questioning transition. Am I here? Is it been long enough? Is my season up? Should I stick to it? And maybe there's another reinvention of who I am. What would you tell that pastor in transition? What advice would Arthur you give him, knowing that he's questioning his purpose, he's questioning his calling, he's wondering if there's something more significant out there? What do you tell him?
You know, I think for me, one of the things that helped me out is to ask the question, you know, Lord, have I given it my all? Have I given it my all where I'm at? Mm-hmm. And if I feel like I've emptied myself out of what I needed to do where I'm at, have I reached the capacity where I'm at? And if I've reached a capacity where I'm at, I always know there's something else. There's always something else. But if I've reached a capacity where I'm at, then I need to look for what the Lord has next. And because we can never fulfill fully everything just in one place. And then I would challenge people to challenge that person to really cling to who Jesus is and to what they know to be true about what Jesus has said to them. Transition can sometimes be an incredible, exciting time. Mm-hmm. It can also be, sometimes people get lost in the transition.
People break.
Yeah.
People can walk away from ministry because
in
the transition
is exactly
too hard.
You know, and or they've they lose sight of the ministry side. You know, transition can start looking glorious and glamorous, and you and in the middle of the transition,
right,
you lose.
I'm out.
Yeah, and you
and
lose
I'm out,
sight.
Son.
Exactly, and you get into you lose perspective spiritually.
Yeah.
You start making it about something else, yeah. And it's like I'm going to this new season. This is about me now.
Right, this is about this,
and it's not. And so I challenge people to cling to God, cling to Jesus, cling to the calling. Go back. I have written out journals when I first got called and the scriptures that God gave me,
yeah.
and things like that. And so I went back to that when I was transitioning out of serving under a lead pastor and stepping into a lead pastor role. I went back to when I was called into ministry and how I felt, things that scriptures that God gave me. And I reflected on those. And I think that allowed me to make the transition with a clear lens.
Clear lens. That's a huge one. To not be conned or to have a sobriety.
Yeah.
Right? I think of scripture says like a sobriety of mind to think of yourself the way you ought to.
Yeah. And exactly that scripture talks about not to think of yourself more highly, because sometimes making the transition, there's a lot of grand, you know, it's like you think, oh, senior pastor,
right.
Oh, lead pastor,
yeah.
You know, there's, and you think of every, you know, person you've looked up to,
right.
And every, you know, priest, we're going to have this service is going to like, and I went into it with such a calm, such a sobering that God, just keep my lenses clear. Keep me reminded of why you called me and what my
really
my
good.
Heart should be in this and what my focus should be. And I think doing that, man, allowed the transition to be so much more stabilizing. And I think that you transition, and although there was rocky moments, and especially early on in being a lead pastor, there were some really difficult moments and seasons. It's interesting, when I was tempted to kind of wonder if I was going to give up recently,
mm-hmm.
I was like, it was small stuff. Like I had been through so much that was, I felt like was so much more difficult.
Yeah.
But I was so stabilized in those moments because I kept.
You were really intentional about making sure that you kept the right thing at the center.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I would challenge people, that in the middle of the transition, don't leave Jesus in out of the transition.
Yeah, and don't get lost.
Yeah.
Don't get lost in the moment, right?
Exactly.
I love it. Arthur, what an encouragement to hear in just a few minutes how you were experiencing a call, you step into a senior role, the challenges almost become impossible, and then you, by God's grace, get an experience of renewal that fuels you to the point where it's not just rhetoric between us right now on a microphone. I was at your church,
yeah,
with a conference that you were running, and how encouraging the life, and it was young, and it was,
yeah,
it was young, it was old, it was not nobody was in the margins. You were really represented a well-rounded congregation, which I thought spoke volumes of the kind of leader that you are.
Yeah.
So I'm encouraged, man. I hope that people are encouraged by hearing your testimony. I'm hoping that you're going to experience the best of your leadership capacity in the season to come. Like, that's really what I'm hoping for, that the Lord
thank you,
is just
man.
Unpack for you people to lead well, and that he would really reveal to you what the pedigree of leader that he's got brewing in you, right? That's the goal for all of us.
Thank you so much, man.
That's what I want to be. I want the best to be ahead of me, right?
Yeah.
So I appreciate your time, dude. I am so thankful that we're friends, and I'm hoping that this conversation will encourage somebody out there who's wondering why they're in the chair they're in.
That's awesome.
So
man.
Thanks, Arthur. I appreciate it. If you want more of this, you can follow us on our blog, Touring for Purpose, which is something that we started on our first 6,000 miles all across the Western U.S., meeting with pastors everywhere. And if it's something that encourages you and you want to share it, please do. We're using the hashtag PDChurch, 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 if you want to see other people going through some of the same conversation all over the country. Love you guys. We'll talk to you soon.